This is another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats with guest Marley's Ghost. I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com. This is Jason D. Diesel Hammond, your host, and I'm here today with Marley's Ghost. And here are the members of the band.
I'm John Wilcox. I play guitar, mandolin, and sing.
Dan Wheatman, mostly bass, slide guitar, harmonica, sing.
I'm Mike Phelan. I play electric and acoustic guitar and dobro, little fiddle sometimes, occasionally the bass, and sing.
I'm Ed Littlefield, and I play the pedal steel guitar, the bagpipes, the guitar, and the bass.
I'm Jerry Fletcher, and I play keyboards and accordion and drums and sing.
Introduce yourself, James.
I'm James Cruz. I play drums.
Okay. Well, except for James, then, we've got a whole bunch of multi-instrumentalists here, but there's nothing wrong with sticking with what you know. So thank you, gentlemen, all for joining us today.
Yeah.
And we're here in Lakewood, Ohio, and you folks are playing the Winchester Music Hall tonight, and I'm looking forward to it. It should be a great show. Have you ever played the venue before?
No.
Okay. Well, it should be a good experience. Hopefully, we'll get a surprise burst of people in here tonight to pack the place, but you never know. So, you guys are celebrating the 25th anniversary of your band, is that correct?
More or less.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's not an anniversary if it's not a little more or a little less, but it's great that you've been able to keep at it so long. And I know a little bit about all of your musical history just from my research, and the surprising thing is, you know, how disparate it all is, which I think...
I think desperate is what you're looking for, but go ahead.
Okay, well, whatever works, I suppose. I think that's that is what makes the band sound so unique to me, is that it seems like, you know, the five of you each bring a little bit of your own background into it, and so you can do so many different genres of music and yet still have it sound like Marley's Ghost. I just want to, you know, get a little bit, go ahead, don't worry. I just want to, you know, ask you guys, because I think of all those different influences, you have an almost indescribable sound because you've got so much going on. But I think what you really are, in the truest sense, in my opinion, is a real folk band. And they, you can take any kind of music and, you know, really make it your own and make something interesting.
I think that's as good a description as
that. That was the original concept when we started it back then. It was sort of a folk. Now when people ask me what we are, I say post-folk.
Okay.
Okay. Eclectic post-folk.
Yeah.
So it's basically country music, though the countries vary. It is, you know, you're much more likely to think of Guinness and whiskey than martinis and cosmopolitans.
Okay.
This Anglo-Celtic tradition as it came into American South and elsewhere.
With a little bit of Jamaica maybe makes sense.
That's south.
Yeah, that is South. It's a little more South than some people would think.
And some acapella stuff and the blues.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, with all of that, and maybe you guys you know, can answer individually, but what would you say is your favorite type of music to play? And, you know, is it...
Good five answers.
Well, that
we'll play it tonight.
Okay, that sounds fair.
You know, it's that famous quote from Duke Ellington. There's two kinds of music, good music and bad music.
We play a mixture.
Okay.
But we do all come from, similar backgrounds in folk music and pop music, and not real pop music, but early rhythm and blues and early country rather than... Alabama contemporary, what used to be contemporary, for 30 years old.
And American folk music and string music from the Appalachians and Irish fiddle music.
And the black tradition, as much as people like us can get at it, which is considerably, in fact.
Okay. Irish tradition.
And it really, it's not being flip about the good and bad. That's really kind of how we look at it. If you bring a song to the band, we'll just try it. And if it seems like it'll work for us, I don't care whether it's gospel or the blues or country, or it doesn't matter.
You know, okay.
What matters is it fun to play? Does it sound good? Do we sound good doing it?
Well, that actually kind of leads me to my next question, which is, you know, because you have such a broad base that you can choose from, I mean, there are literally hundreds of thousands of songs that you could play, and with the talents that's gathered around this table now, you know, you can make it sound great. So how do you guys decide, you know, which songs you want to put on the next record or which songs you want to take on tour with you?
Well, part of it usually, we have to do what we know. For instance, Danny only knows 2,000 songs, so we have to kind of choose some of those songs.
It's, you know, someone will bring a tune to the band, and we'll pretty much try anything. If it resonates, if it, you know, some songs work, some songs don't ever seem to get off the ground for whatever reason. And like this last album was a really great experience. It was sort of, we knew we were going to do a new album, the one we're working on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing of it was, anybody can bring any song and we'll work it up and we'll take it in and record it. And that's pretty much what we did. I mean, we recorded 20 songs.
Yeah, and there's also, I mean, because we've all known each other for so long, I mean, Danny and I grew up together in the same town. Danny and Mike and John have known each other forever, and Ed, and I mean, we've
Danny
all known
and I
each
met
other.
When we just turned 21.
And I met him a month afterwards.
Well,
so
a week afterwards.
So we have a great sense of the music that we all love and what feels good when we all play together and what just makes everyone go, yeah. And there's a lot of writing. I mean,
let me tell you
well.
What sort of happened at the very, very start was Danny was with John Denver's band for many years,
mm-hmm.
and then he had a domestic readjustment and ended up at my house and with his kids, and we spent a lot of time playing music together, and we knew each other through country and bluegrass. Hank Williams was our main connection, to tell you the truth. And
good connection.
Since that time, we had gotten deeply into reggae music, hence the Marley's Ghost, and so it was sort of a blue, acoustic reggae rhythm and blues stuff. This was originally when it was Danny and me and briefly Jerry and my ex-wife, and then it grew into Mike when we got our first real big gig. Mike became the official member of the band, and then Eddie came in very shortly after that, and Jerry disappeared to Kalamazoo for 20 years, and I mean Kalispell. Yeah. But that combination of, yeah, of doing like black, you know, it was just our own stuff that we liked to do, and then that was our initial repertoire, and then grew from there.
Okay. And you hinted at it a little bit there, that, you know, you're always growing, but are there any other ways that you would say that you know, things have changed as a band?
Jerry.
In, well, okay, you're a fairly new addition, Jerry. I think you
almost 6 years now.
Okay, but you had been playing with them for some time before that.
Played on our records before that.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't become an official member until then. But these guys used to call me and have me come over and play on the records when they wanted some drums or piano on the records.
And occasionally we'd get a big gig.
Right.
And Jerry would come and play like a real, you know, a large venue or something where we felt we needed the drums. And
so you're sort of the on-call drum doctor.
Well, yeah, and then thankfully these guys asked me to join the band a few years back, which was a really fun thing for me, and I think that moved. Well, you should speak to that.
Well,
I mean,
the
that
thing you hear tonight is that when he joined the band, he played keyboards and drums at the same time, which sounds like a novelty, but really it was great.
The
audience
were looking around trying to figure out where the drums were coming from,
or where the piano was coming from. They'd see the drums and
they
hear this piano. It's like,
but Cowboy Jack spotted that Jerry was more valuable with both hands on the piano, and we could bring in another drummer.
Cowboy Jack, who produced the last record,
Cowboy
is producing
Jack,
this one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you know who he is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I love him, and actually, you know, want to talk about that that last record and this new one coming up definitely in a moment. But,
well, as a result of these two things, that's why we're now bringing in another drummer.
That's
so
how
I
James is here.
Yeah. Okay.
So that I can be just on keyboards and accordion and yada yada.
Gotcha. So when they brought you in, they thought they were making it five, but you had to find a way to exactly to expand it a little further.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, it probably gives you guys a little bit more range to work with in the music.
Oh, steadier, harder rhythm too.
It really does.
Okay. Awesome. So one thing I noted, just, you know, going through your websites and everything, was, like I said, you know, it seems like everybody has completely divergent interests that they sort of brought into it, all sort of centering around, you know, roots American music in one way or another.
Yeah.
But the only person that seems to be doubled as an influence for the folks in the band was Ralph Stanley. I noticed that both Mike and John mentioned him.
We were in a band in Santa Barbara back in the early 70s that a third of our repertoire was Ralph Stanley because we just loved their... Well,
when I heard Ralph sing, it's just the most soulful singer in any style that I ever heard. It didn't matter that it was bluegrass. What mattered was I just wanted to hear that guy sing some more. And then his harmony singing, really unusual. Not what I was used to.
What bluegrass influence we have is, I think, much more Stanley oriented than Monroe oriented.
Okay.
Like Catholics and Protestants and bluegrass work.
My bluegrass influence is really Flatten Scruggs.
The only bluegrass band that swung.
Well, I just gobbled them up as a teenager. Just, you know, and when I finally got to see them live at the Hungry Eye, you know, Lynn Herrick and I were like 3 feet away from the band. Wow. Anyway, I thought their harmony singing was just totally blew me away. Just incredibly rich.
Pocket that way.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank
you.
Well, I find that really interesting because I'm, you know, personally really into bluegrass myself.
Oh, okay.
It's
okay, we still like you.
Okay. And, I was going to say, you know, it's interesting to hear how that influence came into the band because I think that's one of the things that strikes me is that you take a lot of tunes that you don't necessarily think of having that kind of influence, and when you guys get a hold of them, they somehow become even rootsier. And I was just wondering, I mean, I don't have any, you know, particular in mind, but is there, you know, maybe a favorite tune that you guys have that you took from, you know, another source, you know, maybe a Dylan song or something? And
we often take songs and just sometimes screwing around, we'll play them in an oddball style.
Oh, we used to do Dark as a Dungeon as an a cappella tune.
Yeah.
Really?
And Danny wrote one song, and I'm not sure if it started off as a country tune and ended up as a reggae tune or reggae tune.
No, the other way around.
Started off as a reggae tune and ended up as, I'm not sure what.
The Light of the Forest.
Well, I've been listening to all this Mark Knopfler stuff.
No.
We were sitting outside of Washington, D.C. and started just playing it, and it got rearranged as, Light in the Forest the way it is now.
Okay.
Well, we'll experiment. We'll sing songs like Elmer Fudd. You know, we'll just be silly sometimes. They, you know, take a song and just turn it upside down, and every now and then it's like, God, you know, that kind of works. Or we'll take a song we've been playing for a long time and then screw around with it and change the groove, the feel of it. And
we took Stone Me by Van Morrison that John sings and made it a reggae tune.
After playing
it works,
straight
yeah.
for years,
right.
turned it into a reggae tune.
Just sort of hit you like lightning one day.
Well, and a reggae tune with more acoustic instruments, with John's mandolin taking the place of the guitar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Know, skank.
Okay.
So it gives it a whole different color.
It's amazing what a little bit of mandolin can do to a
yeah.
song.
Yeah.
Well, then
we took Bob Dylan's Lay Down Your Weary tune, and we've been singing that as an a cappella tune.
And Leopard Skin Pillbox hat.
As a blues tune.
Yeah,
right.
All Nick Blues.
Yeah, that was why I brought that Dylan reference out when I said that, because, you know, I heard your version of it, and it's so different from, you know, anything I think anybody else would think of.
Well, Dylan was a real game changer, you know. I think all of us, when we heard Dylan, really pricked up our ears.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Cowboy Jack ordered us to do something with the Old Crow Medicine Show, and so we all got around a huge circle in the studio. And played a Rolling Stones song as a spring band. Like, it was augmented with a chicken picking guitar and a pedal steel, but basically fiddles, banjos, guitar, mandolins.
Yes.
That'll be
great,
on this next record.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
I played National. That's a fun bunch of guys.
And we all sang it together.
They
will be the last time.
Yeah, I haven't had the opportunity to interview them, but I've seen
them
a number of times, and
they
are truly amazing.
Yeah,
are they?
Great
really,
people.
Really nice.
Yeah.
My kids really
Very
like,
genuine.
My teenage
oh, yeah?
kids really like me. Yeah.
Well, hopefully the next time that they come through town, that's one of the interesting parts about doing what I do versus what you guys do. You're always traveling all around. I'm waiting for people to show up. And,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting either way, because you guys get to see the country and all the different venues, and you know, we get to see all the different acts. So, being a music lover versus a music maker, a little bit of a trade-off, but fortunately I don't have anywhere near the talent that any of you guys have, so
well,
I
just
practice.
A lot of the music that we do, you know, at the core of our band, I mean, there's the acapella stuff, and there's also old-time string band music,
mm-hmm.
which, oddly enough, really isn't performance music. Its whole tradition for hundreds of years is music you play in your home for fun with your friends. So, you know, we do that on stage sometimes, you know, but basically that's a, you know, it's kind of a different thing. That old-timey music is really designed, it's a social music, not really.
Not performing music.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, we work with a lot of independent acts and, you know, some folks I know are really starting to get into the whole house concert movement.
Yeah.
Especially if you're an unsigned act or something, you know, you can book your entire tour yourself just by, you know, having emails going back and forth and all that. And I think that, you know, what I've heard from a lot of them. What I've heard from a lot of them, especially just thinking an interview I did a couple months ago with singer-songwriter by the name of Kelly McRae, who's doing that right now. You know, she and her husband are living out of their van and going across the country and just picking up shows wherever they can. And the amazing thing about that is, you know, you take that kind of music and you take that kind of atmosphere and it really builds a community. You know, people are coming over to their friend's house to listen and do that. Do you find that you can still reproduce that kind of a feeling?
We play house concerts, and some of them have been really, you know, a great deal of fun. I'm thinking of that fellow that we played in Arkansas.
Mike Shirky
does his house concerts. And,
good,
and,
oh, yeah.
And there's a good kind of community scene there. And, you know, it's you know, admittedly a house concert by definition is typically, you know, a band playing for the locals. Which is just one step removed from the locals playing for themselves, but it's in the same league basically. You know. But
yeah, we're very much a house concert.
We had a house concert at our house in Petaluma, and we had the Savoie and their family playing. But we also had a bunch of our friends that came in and enjoyed. So it's kind of a house concert, but it was also a great big clusterfuck too. You know, you know, we had, you know, half a dozen people that weren't of the original band, but
mm-hmm.
they were playing along with it. So that's.
And I think our sensibility is really more in our performances. It's really more, even in big venues, much more like a house concert than a show.
We don't like the audience to be too far away from the front of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
We want it to be intimate. And when there's a huge space, you know, we usually try to invite the people to come in closer because it's weird, you know, being playing for a crowd if there's 50 feet between you and the front line. The last night was wonderful.
Perfect.
They had this huge park of 2,400 people.
37.
They had a whole bunch of people that were behind the stage. They were camped, you know, they had their picnics and their families and everybody. And, you know, as far as the eye could see, there were people out there.
And it was a real community builder for the
community
itself.
Real
all big. Ages, all colors.
Excellent.
Rampantly enjoying themselves.
And just like most folk music audience, you need virtually no security at all.
Little kids dancing.
Families
are
just coming up and talking to us.
Nobody's
going to
steal anything.
There's
no violence. Nobody gets weird. One time, 2 years ago, I think, we were playing a concert and we finally had a drunk come up on stage and wanted to introduce the band. And I got to utter that phrase, "Could we have some security up here, please?" In 25 years, that's the only time we've ever had that.
Well, I guess that's an advantage of
good audience
playing mellow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that you know, even in an outdoor venue with thousands of people there, you know, your kind of music, being acoustic and you know, you do a lot of acapella type stuff and all that, it really sort of does bring you closer. You know, even if you're at the back of the line, I'm sure it makes it all feel a little bit more like home. Do you guys ever, you know, sort of have that experience of almost, you know, being a part of the audience yourself and the audience becoming part of you?
Absolutely. That's what we're striving for. That's why we want to
move. There
have
been a lot of places where they've sung along with us.
Danny tries to get them to participate in Ico.
I mean, you'd be amazed.
We'll do One Love, and we'll stop playing, and they'll all sing.
And some of them, they usually sound pretty darn good.
Yeah. But it's really, 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 like last night was really great because they had there wasn't really any space, just enough space between the audience and the front of the stage so all the little kids could dance. And we must have had 20 little kids out there and some grown-ups out there. Just
and it put a smile on our face. Yeah. We're standing there with a huge smile on our face, and even though people, if they notice you enjoying yourselves, then it relies, I mean, that's a big part of performing, is to pretend like you're enjoying yourselves.
With any luck, you actually are. Sometimes there's...
You can fake the sincerity.
Didn't have to pretend last night.
Right. It's great for the old ticket.
Gotcha. Yeah, as long as you have a smile on your face where you're, you know, sitting there strumming the same tune over and over again, right?
Oh, but it was more than that. You kept seeing people smiling back at you, so it's real, you know, contact.
We actually do like what we're doing, and so we don't really have to fake the enjoyment of it that
right.
much.
Well, that was completely sarcastic, of course, on my part.
Well, sometimes we do have stuff that gets in the way. Sometimes the PA system isn't what we want. Or, we're not really used to the heat gap. And so, I mean, we were just sweating like crazy yesterday on stage with both these towels, but we still had a really, really good time. The audience was just, primo audience, just the perfect kind of audience for this concert.
Okay.
Danny has a good line that I wanted to tell before. He says, if you don't like what we're doing now, wait a minute, we'll do it. Because we do so many different types of music.
Yeah.
We'll do reggae and western swing and Delta blues and Celtic and...
It's kept us out of the big time for so long.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's funny, but it's true.
It's true. They don't know what bin to put us in. Our friend Bob Rosman, who plays, you know, bottleneck and blues, and he said that for years he couldn't make any money at all because nobody could figure out what bin to put him in. He was in France, and a guy decided to produce him there, and they just filed him under B for Brosman.
Right.
He sold 20,000 records. He never sold that many records ever, you know.
Yeah, I have to say that, you know, the music classification system that all these people use is so messed up because so many bands that, you know, like you guys have a broad repertoire, and that should be an advantage, you know. The fact that you can play anything well, you think would make people get into you. But, you know, like you said, they can't market you as, this is Coca-Cola, it tastes like Coca-Cola, you like Coca-Cola, drink Coca-Cola. You know, but I think that the folks in this area will kind of identify with that statement, though, because there's a saying here in Cleveland, if you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes. And so, you know, hopefully people hear that and think, you know, whatever kind of music they're in, they can definitely get into you guys.
Some critic referred to it as a one-band folk festival. In fact, bluegrass bands have hired, bluegrass festivals have hired us as a palate cleanser. That they have all other straight bluegrass bands, and they'll put us in there as sort of a change of pace. And it works. It works really well. Audiences really like it. That, wow, man, been listening to bluegrass solid for six acts. Now to have a little something in there to cleanse the palate, and then we'll go back to the bluegrass stuff. And that works.
You know. Easy. He's a bluegrass fan.
I like a lot of different kinds of music, but I totally understand because I'm, you know, constantly, because of my writing, listening to, you know, all sorts of new music, and, you know, it is great to be able to, you know, go from a blues album to an alt-country album to a folk album and, you know, not always be listening to the type of stuff I would have before, you know, all the time.
You grew up in a musical environment where... regular radio, you would hear a rhythm and blues tune, and then you'd hear something by the Lovin' Spoonful, then you'd hear something by B.B. King, and then there was this huge palette, and it was just music on the radio. Things weren't subdivided, and I think the band really reflects that kind of eclectic mix, and unfortunately these days, if you're not in a genre, identifiable genre, then you fall between the cracks. It's hard to get.
Well, you can have the fragmentation of the radio, where it used to be that you could have a crossover hit, and if you were a country hit, but it would cross over to the top 40 or something, and you'd get novelty songs, you know, that would be hits all across the country. And today, we don't get that so much.
The radio is much of a player in popular music. It's the press and the internet.
I think Americana is changing that.
About 18 after.
That definition. You know, it's so all-encompassing, stylistically.
Right. Well, I just, the last concert that we reviewed was Steve Earle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my introduction, I talked a little bit about how Americana sort of started off as a small little niche of mixing rock and roll and country. But, you know, it's expanded in its definition so much ever since then. And, you know, that kind of stuff is really, you know, like all country now.
Oh, I brought money.
But,
let me know the bill and I'll pay it.
Okay.
There you go.
Straight ahead.
But, yeah, with this new sort of feeling of Americana really is, you know, American music. And anything dealing with roots, you know, it has something to go with it. So
that just makes, you know, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons it's emerged, because the guys, they were playing a variety of different kinds of folk or country-influenced music, but it didn't really fit the regular label, you know. And we're not the only band that likes to do a variety of things. We might do it more than other guys, but still, you know, the whole bunch of bands, you know, you can't really, just by one song, you can't really characterize what they do, because half a dozen different things.
So, unfortunately, we are called to arms here.
Yes, I totally understand.
Anything you need from your end?
Would like?
Well, if you guys just have, do you have just a couple more minutes?
Sure.
Because I just want to,
yeah,
I mean, I know you have to run, I don't want to hold you back, but I do want to talk about the latest albums.
Yeah, no,
And, you know, that's an important thing to make people know exactly.
We have a friend that introduced us to Cowboy Jack. We went down there and we recorded two albums.
Okay, there we go.
And we got on the 60s, we had Marty Stewart come in and do some mandolin tracks and some vocals, and that was a lot of fun. And then on the 20th, the John Prine came in and tracked vocals that had us all in tears. I had to go get towels from the bathroom, you know, but he just knocked it out of the park. And we're expecting Emmy Lou Harris on the 9th. That we're swinging by there, and
friends of cowboys. That's how we get
that,
to.
Okay,
so we have a friend, a mutual friend, who has known Cowboy for 40 years and worked with him when he had his studio in Texas.
Okay,
and he kept telling Cowboy about us. We played a gig in Nashville, and he brought him down to see the band, and then he asked us if we would like to work with him.
If we'd like to come down and hang out with him in Nashville.
Yeah. That's a nice request.
Yeah. So,
yeah, we thought about it for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So that's how we got hooked up with him.
Okay.
And we went down, and the first album was very interesting. It was really just kind of sitting around playing a lot of music, and then slowly it took shape.
Okay.
But there was not really
and that was,
a
that was
lot
Ghost
of
Town, correct?
That was Ghost Town.
Okay.
It
Which
didn't
I
start,
love, by the way.
It didn't start with enormous intention. Like, this is what we're going to do. It sort of found its way through playing and working, and then that was a great experience, and we were getting ready to do another album, and we asked Cowboy if he would.
Well, Cowboy actually asked us if we would want to do another one. Yeah. And
would you
Cowboy
please let me produce?
Yeah. Cowboy said that you know, his style, he's not really so much a hands-on producer like Van Dyke Parks was with us in the Spook album, that he sort of said, I allow these things to happen. I create a space for these things to happen.
So, I don't need to make it happen, I like to let it happen.
Yeah. And,
it seems to have worked for him.
Yeah, so far.
You know, when a guy has gold records and platinum records from Johnny Cash and U2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pretty disparate right there.
He kept telling me I was his favorite steel guitar player. I had to go out and get new hats. I used to wear a 7 1/8 on the 7 1/4.
Well, there you go. That's pretty good compliments.
It is for me. I'm glowing from it still. I just, as long as I can bask in that rosy glow for the rest of my life.
So just, you know, personally, what did you guys think of working with somebody who is so absolutely renowned? I mean, you mentioned Van Dyke Parks.
Well, he's just a totally lovable guy. He's great to work with. He knows everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We love the guy, and he loves us, and it's
He says, we're in
really
the
fun
business. If we're not having fun, we're not doing
our jobs right.
No, he's serious about it. You know, he turned 80 years old March 5th?
6th? April 5th.
Anyway,
and he really does draw it out of you, you know, with his comments and his presence. I mean, his style is very, very cool.
He would send you down the office and cue his little microphone. That last one really sucked. We're going to do it over again. But he's rightfully a legend. There's, you know, all these people respect him so much. because he's worth it.
Well, there's kind of an amazing parade of people who come by just like, just to come kiss the ring, you know.
Well, I certainly wouldn't mind having a chat with him. I mean,
so
it must be fascinating.
We're thankful. We feel blessed to have this experience.
Yeah, really, I mean, it's just amazing. Great fun.
We toured with him last year, was it in Arizona and North Carolina, too.
Oh, that was
great. It was fun.
Yeah.
And he'd start out, he'd play some songs, then we'd play. When he would get off the stage, he'd wind up dancing with every pretty girl in the room.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no way I'll ever, 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 ever get tired of playing steel guitar behind just a girl I used to know.
Amen.
It would never happen.
Yeah.
No.
Fair enough.
I could do several times a day for the rest of my life. Yeah. I would never get tired of that.
Now, it's Cowboy Jack, so we all know that he loves a polka. And he has not convinced you guys to do one yet, or is
he
managed to work in?
Somehow, even though Jerry plays accordion, it hasn't happened.
You know about touring Yugoslavia with Frankie Yankovic?
Is that the new plan?
No, he did it already.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Years ago.
He was going through security a few months ago.
Absolutely.
And they told him to take his belt off. And he said,
I'll see you in there.
If I take my belt off, my pants will fall. I said, sir, will you please take your belt off? Take his belt off and his pants fell off.
Well, there you go.
Cowboy.
Hey, I mean, the man knows of what he speaks, right? All right, well, thank you guys very much
for joining me.
It was a pleasure speaking with you. This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.